Mr. Acting Chairman, if the chairman can get out of this, can the rest of it?
Yeah. All right. So, anyway, we're glad to have you here today. So, our first, we've got two agency hearings this afternoon. We've got, I think, first is our friends with the MMA. So, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brian Patterson. I am the commissioner on mixed martial arts. I used to sit over there in that corner. Recognize many of you. A little less. And then I'd like to introduce some of our folks that are with us tonight. Our executive assistant, Sarah Ullman, is here with me over there. Commissioner Dickie Shaner. And then upcoming commissioner Dennis Ellis is also with us this morning. We want to talk with you about, I thought I'd give you a brief piece on our progress that we've made, talk about some of the things that we've come across, and then keep it as short as humanly possible. We've granted you an opportunity to conduct a Boxing Association Commission professional training for all of our referees. We have folks now licensed in five counties. When we originally started, we had some cost issues because we were paying people to drive because we could only find people that were licensed referees from other states. So we wouldn't pay them from their state, but once they arrived at our border, we'd pay them that piece. Well, that's not a good way to conduct it. What we wanted is areas of expertise. So now we have five major pockets where we have major populations, where we have a head referee, judges, and pieces. And so we've got it down to where we only need to probably reimburse travel for 50 miles. And that was reducing the overall cost by about a third. Because if you're not paying three judges, a referee, an inspector to drive 400 miles, you've significantly reduced most of your costs and no overnights or costs along those lines. We created a statewide inspector position. We recruited officials from every basically major area within the state so we can be close to everybody. We hired an administrative assistant that's paid for on a fight-by-fight basis. So we don't pay if there's nothing. But in a month there might be two. We have that going. We also did a PayPal to accept all of our fees and payments online. And the reason for that is we originally, when we got an audit, they were uncomfortable because a lot of cash is getting passed. So let's say, for instance, a second for the fight, the guy who's going to Senator Wasserberger is going to make sure that I have lots of my nose is all greased up and my hands are properly wrapped to get my water. It costs him $20 to license himself for that. Well, he's going to bring $20 to the fight. The guy brings $20. So we walked back to A&I with a brick of tens. And that was an obvious issue that we're walking around with all that cash. So we said we're removing all of that. And so now everybody just pays online. They can do it on their phone right there, and they show us there's your receipt, and it's done. And so if someone hasn't paid early, we take care of that on the spot. It also reduces fighter costs, and it helps us with promotion pays as well. So we have a real consistent log of where everything comes into A&I. Where some issues have come in and where we go with is we have a decrease in revenue because of three things have happened. One is South Dakota started hosting contests, and so take for instance, we used to have consistent almost every other month or every third month fights in Torrington. They no longer take place now. They go in Scotts Bluff because if you hold the contest in Torrington, a few people come from Scotts Bluff. If you hold it in Scotts Bluff, everybody from Torrington drives over. It's an odd thing, but the guy says he increases his income by 30 to 50% by just holding it across the border, just based on where people are. We also have a contract difference between the current provider at the Camplex and their promoter that they have. They do about four contests a year, and they are looking for a new promoter to sign new contracts. There's been a dip in that period of time. They're also one of our most frequent consistent places is in the Camplex, probably is our most frequent place. The other place is in Pinedale, and she continues to do lots of contests. Seems like every contest that's held in Cheyenne gets a good number of folks to come, but no consistency. There's only been two in the last 3 years, so it's just no one seems to drive the market because what they do is they host it in Fort Collins, and again, you get people from Wyoming who go fight in Colorado for it. But we sent help to both Nebraska to help them out in South Dakota and helping them ramp up to help promulgate their rules. We sent our officials over to help them in Scotts Bluff, Nebraska, and help them do all of the regulating and that. And also, as they promulgated rules in South Dakota, we've sent our officials over there free to help them out as well. The other hole that's happening is they figured out that we don't regulate tough man contests. So if you take off the gloves and you essentially don't and you remove the wrestling component and you just let guys bare knuckle box, bare knuckle fight, we don't regulate that. And there are we probably could work towards that, but currently it's a hole in there. There's a pay-per-view on HBO in 2 weeks. Tank Abbott's fighting in Casper. A guy in Riverton found the hole, and he started it, and so now it's caught up because the issue comes in is you don't have to do all of the steps. And the steps that when originally we brought this forward is one, fighter safety. We've got you have to have a physician at the ring. You have to have blood tests for everybody involved, so when you're bleeding on each other, everybody is clean. We have the opportunity to have refs that are trained. Judges that are trained, you have an inspector on duty. Everybody's hand wraps have been checked. One of the biggest cheats you find is guys wet their wraps. They turn it into it turns into more like concrete after your hands have been wrapped up and you dip them in water for a little bit. And then so you have to have someone constantly monitoring those pieces. But if you provide that safety, then and other states are providing the safety, then that fighter counts that record going. If you fight in an unregulated state. You can be barred from another state. You can be banned for a while. You can have a suspension for any number of months. So people, fighters want to have those opportunities. And also, we enforce contracts between promoters and the fighters that they fight. So if the promoter wants the fighter he has contracted him to fight at 185 pounds, and the kid comes in at 193 pounds, we fine the fighter, and we can also then suspend the fighter because he's broken his contract with the promoter because the promoter said, I'm executing this, and you guys have broken your contract. So we help protect promoters and protect spectators by our bonding. When individuals come, one of the first things you have to do is sign a surety bond. It's a $10,000 surety bond that says if you skip town, which happened about many months before we went one day before our commission went live the night before. So on June 30th, because we became legal on July 1, there was a fight locally here at Goofy's. And so a series of things. So he didn't pay out any of the winners. None of the prizes were laid out. They pulled a kid out of the crowd without a blood test because he didn't have anybody to fight. And they said, will you fight for $400? And the kid goes, gets his head beat in and doesn't get his $400, goes to the emergency room, costs him $1,200. And with absolutely no regulation. And then he skipped town, and they tracked him in Illinois. In Illinois, they finally caught up to him because he was doing the same thing there. And then he was prosecuted in Illinois and had lawsuits there. But now also they're required to hold insurance on each of the fighters. We found insurance companies that will cover you for at least your emergency room visit, different steps along those lines. But in this process, I would like to... Before we go a little bit further, I was hoping to have our executive assistant, that'd be okay, Mr. Chairman, talk yeah. about the day-to-day duties, because what we do on a day-to-day basis is important to understand. We pay Mrs. Oman $500 per fight for all of the services that we provide, and that is paid for by the event fee, which is $400, plus we'll pick up usually $100. We also get a 5% of the gate. Is how we then pay for the rest of the stuff, owning a state scale, all the different pieces is part of it. And it's about 20 hours of work per fight, but it's also the stuff that comes in between. And if it'd be okay with you, Mr. Chairman, if someone could tell you what some of those pieces are.
Sure. We just want to be expeditious.
Yes.
Okay. Senator, may I proceed? Okay. Right. Like he was saying, a promoter will contact me. This is kind of more of a reactive type of a business. We got to make sure that the surety bond is in place, check on the calendar, check to make sure the event permit is happening, make sure there's the security. Then I will work closely with the inspector because the inspector is going to be the one that's at the fights. And then we health insurance, have to make sure that all the fighters have their appropriate fighter license and they're up to date. Then the blood work, that's kind of a really big one, and I'll be working with the promoters a lot with that. Sometimes I'll have to resend them in because over email you just can't see half the time. So it is not an 8-to-5 job. Sometimes it'll be 10 o'clock at night when some of these things do come in. But like I said, I've got to make sure that that's one of the most important things that I do right there. And then we also have to look at the bout matchup to make sure that it's going to be a fair bout, so that you have a guy who's trained 2 years, another guy is trained 2 years instead of a guy training 2 years versus 10 years. And then we also have to upload a lot of that information to the ABC, mixedmartialarts.com website, so that it's national. It's information that other commissions can look at as well. So we always have to keep that updated. Then we make sure that the appropriate officials are there. Then the inspector will go. All the paper will come through me, and I'm pretty much the liaison between the promoter. I'll ask the commissioners a lot for feedback on questions that don't seem right. That can be kind of a time-consuming process depending on where we're trying to figure out an answer. I work at the board meetings. I do the minutes there. I work on the website. And that's not just with the events. This is just the day-to-day events that might happen. I will check emails probably 5 times a day to see if anything has come in. Maybe nothing's come in, but I just refresh it just to see. And then we'll have to look into suspensions. I've had to research in North Dakota to see about what's going on with the suspension and make sure that everything's okay so that a fight can proceed, because we do want these fights to proceed, but they have to be safe. Lots of little phone calls from fighters and promoters, trying to get them in the right area of where they need to go so that they can have a safe, successful event.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'll be quick now and tell you the pieces of how do we function, because we have a very small budget. We pay $300 to A&I a month for our and that's approximate to do all of our accounting work. We pay $60 a phone call anytime that we need any IT help. It's $60 a phone call, and it starts to drill down. We get about in from each one of the fights, we get about $700 total probably of net revenue from each one of the bouts that we then use to function. Noah, the news is that I only have attorneys, so I have some good former legislators, and my wife's best friend, who I call favors out, who refuse to get paid to do this and take no reimbursement. And that's how we function, because of those bills that come in. But when we approached the end of this and we got to the last biennium, we had spent the $10,000 original appropriation to buy a computer and buy the scales and buy the GoPro so we can visit the pieces. And all of a sudden it looked like we were making money, but then it tapered off and we owed $3,600 at the end of the biennium to A&I. When that bill came, we had a box of 8 shirts because we were short $1,100. And so I bought that box of 8 shirts back for $1,200 and then redonated them because they're how you identify who's your referee at the fight. And the novelty of me doing that will wear off quickly with my wife. And so what we thought we'd talk to you about is when we put back in that $10,000 as a payback because we were going to do so well, the thing we can't control is the number of bouts. And what we don't want to do is raise fees and raise costs, because you can get to a point where you regulate this into non-existence. And right now we do have the lowest fees of any state for our refs and our judges and the 5% gate, because we also don't charge a television fee or a promotion fee that other states charge. So there are other sources of revenue, but there comes a point of diminishing returns where there just won't be any more contests and no opportunities for local kids to compete and people to get out and do some things. So our request for you to consider is either moving that loan down or removing that footnote from Section 46, Subsection 2, and they have it for you guys to have as a pass out. And it's paying back that loan at $2,500 a year. If we reach the end of this year, we will be, unless we get a surge in scheduling, and usually we know 3 to 6 months out what it's going to look like, we'll be about $1,700 short come the end of the biennium for the full payback. We're out of shirts. I might be able to buy the scale and donate it back, but I don't know if it'll be. It's good. We'll see. But we are getting there. But that $10,000 is a significant payback for our small budget.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Questions? Here, Representative Connolly.
That this was left over here, and I was told that it was yours.
It's the only way to get seen over there. It's true.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms.
But my question, I'm so obviously I'm new on the committee, and so I'm a little bit confused about how this exception request is coming through, especially because your line item has been assigned to me to present, and so I'm a little confused about why we're hearing this now, and there's nothing in our big fat budget book.
Representative Peterson, or excuse me, former Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you so much, Representative Connolly. The reason this is just worked out for when we were looking at our year-end budgets and things were coming together. This would obviously, you'd have to move an amendment to do so. It is not in your budget in front of you at all. This is a request from the committee after the point that the governor's budget was done. Based on, that's when we had the major drop in the change in the Camplex piece, because we were holding out maybe we'd have two more fights there, and that might get us barely to get back the first 2,500. But with it, when we're just two fights away, it's too close to the end. And why is this important? Because we can't carry a debt. Because remember, I auto-collapsed this when I created this legislation. I auto-collapsed it if we run out of money. So if we run out of money, it just doesn't exist anymore. So there's no carryover or things back. And I thought about adding that footnote to Medicaid, but I didn't get a lot of help at the time. But that was the process. So that's why we come to you with this.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if we were to move forward and forgive that $10,000, does that put you in a position where you think you will be self-sustaining, at least for the foreseeable future?
Right. Mr. Chairman. Representative Stubson, I think so. Even if we got down to a point where we were just six, if we were even at just six fights here, our biggest bill is the $3,600 from A&I for accounting. And that's what they do is they just base – it's not an exact hour-by-hour format that they bill you for. It's part of a because we had questions like, well, how do you do that? And so sometimes it's more, sometimes it's less. But they take an average when they put together their boards, and then they bill us out. And it comes to about $300 to $360 a month. And when that bill comes at the end of the year, that's our biggest bill, is that $3,600, because everybody does it for the love of the sport. And I don't let any commissioners get paid underneath me. And so the only person who gets paid is Miss Ullman here, who does our day-to-day work. And that's really it. The really other people is at the fight, each one of the referees receives $150 for their entire night, the judges, and the referee receives $200 for his efforts, and we don't reimburse travel over 50 miles anymore to help reduce those costs.
Okay. Is that it? Any other questions? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I'm confused as to exactly what you're asking us for. In the original legislation, that was a $10,000 loan, not an appropriation. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, legislative intent that I wrote that it was a $10,000 general fund appropriation. It was not a loan. At the point that we were then into a year into it, appropriations came forward. They saw that Chairman Bebout said, if there's profitability, and the discussion came forward that said, well, if boards that are returning revenue can do that, then they should pay back. And I don't argue with that at all, that if we actually – if we maintained our 12 fight a year status, we could easily make this. And that's why at the time I said I'm happy to do a loan payback on the original $10,000 if that's what the committee so chooses. And there may come a time when that's still on the table. But it was originally just an appropriation, and then it became – a loan the following year because we were profitable that first year. We were profitable by $1,200.
Mr. Chairman, it's actually a yes or no question. It's a loan. It was a loan rather than an appropriation.
No, it was an appropriation, Mr. Chairman.
And when, so that's what I thought. I was a co-sponsor of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
When did it become a loan?
With a budget footnote the following year, Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns. The process was literally, you're correct that it was originally an appropriation.
That's where, my recollection was mm-hmm. off on that.
And then what happened is we made revenue, and then they said, well, maybe you should pay back that amount.
Okay, so have you paid any of it back yet?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, no, we have not.
So, Mr. Chairman, if you're on the same pace that you're on, and if that debt is just forgiven and or returned to be an appropriation, mm-hmm. you guys are just plumb happy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, that's all we want. We're not looking for more money. We just want to have the original appropriation be what it was, appropriation.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. Anything
thank you,
else?
Members of the committee. I had my birthday in this room for 4 years straight, so I brought those cookies. I felt like we should have more cookies on my birthday. So it's my birthday season. Enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, that's sad. That's sad. Okay. Thank you very much. Director. Welcome. Yep, there you go.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Scott Talbot. I'm the director of the Wyoming Game and Fish Department, and I'd like to make a couple introductions. I have our Chief Fiscal Officer, Meredith Wood, our Chief of Services, Gene Cole, and Deputy Director, John Kennedy, with me this evening, and hopefully we'll be able to answer any questions that you have. To start with, I'd like you to know that we have no supplemental budget request, and we are not asking for any money whatsoever.
Is that a painful opportunity for you? Is that painful to bypass that, or are you okay?
No, it's not.
That?
It's actually great. I'm loving it.
Great.
Mr. Chairman, 2 years ago, when we went and asked for a license fee increase, there was considerable confusion about our funding source and our budget at that time. It was a bill was passed that said that the Game and Fish Commission shall present our budget to JAC for your review. We did that last year, and we are here this evening to share our 2015 budget. The commission operates on an annual budget, not a biennial budget, and this budget, we're in the middle of it right now. It was adopted by the commission. We sent copies of that budget to this body during the time that it was approved by the commission. You have a copy of it in front of you. That provides lots of information. Tonight we'd like to hit the high points of some of that, and if you have any specific questions about that budget, we'd be glad to answer them. And so at this time I'd ask Meredith Wood to go ahead and walk you through an overview of the budget, and if you have any questions, we'd be glad to answer.
I think that's known as a handoff. Ms. Wood.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as Director Talbot mentioned, the information that was provided to you in hard copy has extensive detail. We've pared this down to a 12-slide presentation, but please keep in mind that we can drill into any of the details if you have questions. So it might not be beneficial to follow along with your printed version for that reason. So our FY15 Game and Fish Commission budget, as approved by our commission in July of 2014, is what we're discussing this evening. The Game and Fish is made up of several funding sources, the primary one of which is license fees. Approximately 55% of our annual revenue is generated from license fees, and thanks to JAC and other legislative bodies, roughly 9% is general fund, and that's earmarked towards five very specific programs, in addition to some of the others. The next, the PRDJ State Wildlife Grants at approximately 19 or 20%, those are the federal excise tax dollars collected through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service based on the number of hunters and anglers that are in Wyoming.
Mr. Chairman?
Sure. Representative Simpson.
Just a quick question on the interest received slice of the pie. Is that the interest off your trust account, or is that, or are there other sources of that interest as well?
Go ahead, Ms. Wood.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the interest received is both our trust fund account and our operating cash balance, which is administered through the Treasurer's Office with all other state funds.
And, Mr. Chairman, just a quick follow-up. I'm assuming the vast majority of it, though, is not off your cash account. Instead, it would be off the trust account. Is that an accurate assumption?
Ms. Wood?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the balance of our cash account is approximately $52 million. The balance on our trust fund is $25 million. So, in fact, it's the opposite.
Okay. Sure. Representative Moniz.
I hate to interrupt. There's a bill floating out there to change resident hunting licenses from 80 to 90%. How would that affect your 55% license fee revenue?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I believe that I didn't hear your question in full, but the impact of that bill is about $150,000 to the agency. By reissuing those licenses to residents rather than non-residents, the differentiation in the license fee.
And that's less. It's less revenue to the department.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. Continue on, Ms. Wood.
So for FY15 budget, it's comprised of six primary categories, which includes 24 major programs. Comes in at just under $76 million, and this does include our general fund appropriation for FY15 only, which is approximately $6.1 million. So the first of those categories, well, by object series, you can see our general fund appropriation there at the 6.1, Game and Fish Commission budget at 70.6 for a total of the 76. Like many other state agencies, the primary area of budget need is in our 100 series personnel services.
Have you, on the general fund stuff, we've paid for the general fund for various things like, some sage grouse, and we've got some other things in there that we funded that we've asked you to do. Have you ever done an analysis to figure out to see if the funding we've, how's that matching up with the funding we've given you for those specific tasks versus the costs related to those specific tasks?
Mr. Chairman, we have, and in fact, we have five specific programs. Sage grouse, which you mentioned, vet services, wolf, aquatic invasive species, mm-hmm. and CWCS, our sensitive species program. We did do a full-blown evaluation of total program cost, including Game and Fish Commission dollars that support those, and they were included in our previous biennium request.
Mm-hmm.
And of that request, 100% was approved for the department for those programs, and it came out to approximately $1.25 million of exception requests. So.
Okay, so from that, so as you're looking at your biennial budget this year, where are you at with those programs? Are you, as far as you can tell, are you on course? Are you looking like you're running behind or ahead, or just out of curiosity, where are we?
Mr. Chairman, with that biennial appropriation, we seem to be right on track and not having to use our Game and Fish Commission funds.
Okay. Thank you.
So the first of those six categories, which includes some of the 24 programs that I mentioned, is the director's office. And under the director's office, there are seven specific sections, one of which is the commission, seven-member body commission appointed by the governor. The director's office equates to approximately 7% of our total budget. Also under the director's office is our education section, which includes conservation education and hunter education. We also have our entire human resources section, which is the personnel management at just under, well, $350,000 there. There's also habitat protection in that group. Strategic management, which is part of our human dimension strategies and our strategic planning. And then we also have a grants component there that is for research project specific.
Okay.
The next section is our fiscal division. In our fiscal division, we have six sections. We did also, over the last couple years, do an overall department evaluation and some restructuring and division grouping. And the fiscal division was affected by that. We took on customer service and mailroom. We also have in here the licensing section, which includes the draw section, which is the limited quota sales, and then over-the-counter sales as well. General accounting, of course, is our procurement, grants, budgeting, disbursements, payment area in there. We also have eight regional offices, which are manned by two regional office personnel, which is the regional office management budget of 1.5. The legislatively mandated section under fiscal is made up of five different programs. There's landowner coupons, damage claims, SALEX, which is an information system for law enforcement, special retirement for law peace officers, and cost allocation, which is the repay of provided service, state services to the general fund.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you. Have your damage claims varied much over the last few years? Are you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, damage claims statewide have increased significantly in the last 4 years, and part of that has to do with commodity prices. Prices of cattle, the prices of crops have gone up many times what they were in the past. But, yeah, damage claims are up significantly.
Okay, thank you. Let's keep going.
The third section is our services division. This is a diverse division. There's several things housed under services, one of which is all of our habitat and access maintenance, including our properties and facilities. So that's all of our WHMAs, walk-in areas, hunter management areas, and those kind of things. I apologize for that pop-up. I don't know what's going on. We also have our property rights section in there for all of our easements and B-title property work. Our Game and Fish Forensics Laboratory is under Services Division, and the entire department's IT information systems, all computer purchases are housed under Services Division. We also have our engineering and facility maintenance, like I mentioned, under there.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, I was just curious. So then on the property rights, the 1.8 billion, what goes into that line item?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative,
sure, go ahead.
For property rights, you can see the breakdown here by object category. So personnel services, there are three full-time employees in there, support services. We have capital outlay, which are improvements on our properties, maintenance on our properties. We also have taxes. We, Game and Fish, pay taxes on all of our properties, so some of that comes out of here as well.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's keep going.
Our fourth main slice of that budget pie is our fish division. Fish division makes up approximately 19% of our total budget. In that is five sections that house many different things. For example, aquatic habitat also includes all of our regional aquatics, all of our water management program, fish passage, and also habitat project, trust fund projects. Fisheries management includes regional and statewide management. Boating access, which is reimbursed at 75% with some of those DJ dollars that I mentioned before on boating fuels, excise tax dollars collected on boating fuels. And it also includes AIS, which is one of the generally funded programs.
But just you've got the hunting and fishing licenses all put together. Do you know what the fishing license fees are? Just want to stack that up against the expenditures in the fish division.
The fish license revenue generates approximately 73% of the total program cost, so it costs roughly 23% greater than that, and the revenue earned on that for FY14, I believe, was $15.9 million.
Okay. Thank you.
And then finally, there are sensitive species in there, which are funded through majority general funds. I believe over 80% of that category is paid for with general funds, and then the other portion is paid for with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service grant dollars from the State Wildlife Grant Program, which is reimbursed at 65%.
Okay.
And for the fifth piece of the pie, our wildlife division, clearly our largest division, there are13 different sections under the wildlife division. Law enforcement is in there. 100% of our law enforcement, even though game wardens spend approximately 30% of their time actually doing law enforcement activities, are included in that law enforcement budget of just under $8 million.
Where the rest, are they just spread among whatever divisions they work in, the balance of the game warden salaries and related expenses?
Mr. Chairman, no. 100% of the game warden salaries and their travel and all other support costs for budget purposes are in that line.
That's all. They're all in there?
That's correct.
All right.
There's a property rights access line in here. That's for our PLPW program, our public private lands public wildlife program. Again, sensitive species, you saw that appear in the fish division. It's the same for the wildlife division side, funded by general funds and competitive grant funds. Large carnivore program also has an asterisk by it that contains our general fund appropriation for the wolf component.
Yes, Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. So this what I was trying to get my head around is, you know, the total amount that's spent annually on the access issues. I mean, I see that spread across all of these different pie charts here, and it seems to be a good-sized number. I've just for my information and the indulgence of the chair is, how much do we spend on that each year, and what are we getting? What are we getting for it? Is that program tapering down? Is it? I know it has ebbed and flowed over the years, at least in my area, with how many people were signing up for those easements, or to grant those easements.
We did apply a reduction to our FY14 budget, which carried over into this budget, that maintained all of our current PLPW access contracts, which is over 1.25 million private acres for hunting and also 273 lake acres for fishing on private property. So we are maintaining at those levels, and the program has recently expanded to an additional coordinator, so it is growing up, I believe.
President Greer?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I might be a little unfair to answer right now, but I was just curious what the total cost of that program, because, you know, what we're seeing are certain things put in slices of the pie, but we have a horizontal component that ties those together across your different services.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the lease agreements that we have with landowners, it's just under $800,000. I don't have the specific exact number right off the top of my head, but for those leases, it is just under $800,000. That does not include, like I mentioned before, all of our walk-in areas, our hunter management areas, those kind of things. So we can follow up with that for you.
And Mr. Chairman, and that's what I'm looking at, because, you know, I look in the services division, we're saying part of that money goes in there. I look in the fish, part of that money, in the wildlife, and so that's just what I was kind of looking for.
Okay, thank you, Representative Greer. Do you want to amend an amend and revise, revise and amend? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, and part of that has to do that, for example, the work that we do on our units, we call that habitat and access maintenance. And though that is, for example, the Spence Moore area or any of the Chain Lakes units that we actually have, that portion is still called access, and there's public access on those private lands that are owned by the commission. And we'd be glad to put that information together for you, not only for the PLPW access, our acquisition account, which normally or historically we have used to purchase private access. That access account has been zeroed out for a couple years now. We literally keep a balance of $12,000 to $15,000 in there to do some type of appraisal or something. If a landowner comes to us, we'd at least be able to talk with them. But we haven't had any money in that account for a number of years. So that access comes in different forms as well. We'd be glad to put that together for you.
Okay. Representative Greer?
And Mr. Chairman, I think that answers my question. And just I'm new to this committee and just getting a feel for where we are and tight times and what programs are expanding and contracting. Yeah.
Are you seeing any changes, any trends in the in like, yep, what is it, access, yes, and isn't that what's called access, yes? And do you see interest in that expanding or contracting or holding steady? Where are we?
Mr. Chairman, that has held fairly stable as far as the voluntary donations. They've decreased slightly, but that has been, through time, a very stable source of funding.
Okay.
That's just over $100,000.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? All right. Let's continue on. Thank you.
And the final component, the sixth slice of that pie, is our reimbursable grants, which is a little bit tricky, but I think the key thing that we would just like to state is that this is a good thing for the department. These are competitive grant dollars, whereby during budget time, we develop it based on historical awards that we've been provided. We don't know necessarily for which specific project or which specific object category we will be awarded these dollars, but we do need it to be part of our overall budget so that we have the spending authority to accept those funds if we are successful in our competitive applications. The 100 series item that's on here may raise a question, and we have eight boating safety law enforcement officers that are funded through a U.S. Coast Guard grant 4 months of the year, so that's what it makes up.
Thank you. Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, are all those grants federal grants, or are there private grants that you guys receive as well?
Ms. Wood?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there is a whole variety of grant funding partners that we work with, some of which are federal. Our largest ones, I would safely say, are federal, but we also partner with the WWNRT, for example, on all different variety size projects. Other NGOs we partner with as well.
Okay, thank you. All right.
Approximate expenditures by species. This is always a question that comes up. Of course, our big game, which is also our largest revenue generators, also receive 46% of the largest piece of our expenditures. Next being fish, small game birds, T&E species, other species which include bison, turkey, and some sensitive species, and then finally trophy game. And with that, I'll take any questions that you may have.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question that's a little off topic. We just had a roadkill bill that came in front of us, and I'm just curious if you have done any type of evaluation of what that economic cost of that would be to you if you have to go out, and what you would envision in terms of enforcement of that bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, representative, we have not done that, and I would certainly be glad to put that together for you as far as an estimated cost of time travel to respond to that.
Well, you got about a day and a half. So.
Okay. We'll get it to you.
You're just saying. Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Chairman,
excuse me.
You.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. We're going to go down to the Representative Conley on the far end.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And seeing as how we're off topic, Director, I'm curious about how the Aquatic Invasive Species Program is working in terms of the sticker program for all boats that are coming across state lines. How much are we generating in revenue? How successful has it been? Things like that.
Director?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have actually had a fairly significant shift in direction of the AIAS program in the state of Wyoming. And if you'll recall, when we first started that, we were primarily inspecting boats in the center of the state around bodies of water such as Alcova, Pathfinder, Glendale. We've moved that out to the ports of entry, working with YDOT, and now we're trying to inspect those high-risk boats that are coming to us from out of state. An individual who lives in Casper and only puts their boat in Alcova is no risk to that water source. So we have focused outside of the state. The decal, we've worked with Senator Christensen to make some changes to that statute that would make it more user-friendly, where we could use electronic sales and use receipts that folks, if they're driving in from Colorado, they stop at one of our check stations, they don't have that decal, they could simply get it on their smartphone, and then we could use that receipt rather than the actual decal and facilitate that as we move forward. As far as the amount of money that we're generating on that, is about $700,000 a year, and I believe that's about half of the program cost at this point.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, I just, and I missed the beginning, I apologize, had another meeting, but just kind of the whole state of the state on your budget, you know, for the last 3-4 years, it's been, for lack of a better word, kind of crisis mode. I mean, we've had all kinds of deals, really, and so where are you at today? I mean, I don't sense that today from you. I mean, and some of the actions we've taken, obviously, with some of these generally funded programs and those kind of things, and you've undergone some pretty significant cost cutting. So just, you know, in a few minutes, I know the hour's late, but just kind of your take on that and how it looks long term.
Go ahead, Director.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I appreciate that question, and I'll try to answer that succinctly, concisely, and recognize that it's late in the evening. As you're aware, we went through a process in FY13 where we cut $2 million out of the budget. In FY14, we came back and cut $4.6 million out of our budget. During that time, we eliminated a number of positions. We restructured, particularly in administrative roles. And we eliminated a number of supervisory positions that were supervising a small number of people, made significant combinations, if you will. We combined several different programs in our Cheyenne office, and our goal was to keep our field personnel serving the public. At that same time, we asked this committee and the governor to augment, and I believe it was Senator Perkins that asked earlier about our general fund programs, and there were several of those that we were spending a significant amount of commission dollars in. With the support of this committee and also the governor, those programs are now basically paying their own way. Sage grouse, sensitive species, those programs are general fund programs and largely paid for by the general fund. We continue to have several open positions in the agency. We have about 18 vacancies that we're trying to fill right now, but having a very difficult time finding qualified candidates, particularly for our game warden positions. We have very, very stringent requirements for that position, and we have about 7 of those positions that are vacant right now.
I'm sorry, what were those, particularly those 7? What positions?
Game warden.
Okay, I couldn't hear that. Okay.
Yeah, we do an extensive criminal background. We do an extensive law enforcement profile, psychological profile, and we're having a difficult time filling those positions. At the same time,
Representative, but we went through these budget cuts. We were in a position nationally where there was a significant glut on firearms and ammunition, and we recognized far more dollars than we anticipated from Pittman Robertson. Pittman Robertson is a federal excise tax on firearms and ammunition that comes back to the states based on a formula which includes the number of license holders, population, and geographic size of the state. So we ended up with a significant amount of money there.
Chairman, what's that number? Just has it gone from $2 million to $12 million, or what's that number been?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, very close. It went from, in the 90s, about $2 million, I think, up as high as $16
million. Yeah.
It's on its way back down at this point. But I guess
it was good.
Yeah, one more comment out of Washington, and we might end up with another $16 million.
It's too bad that's not expended on brass expended per capita or something like that. We'd probably do a little better.
False. No, go ahead.
Mr. Representative, we were able to reduce costs, and with those increased revenues, we do have a working cash balance at this point. And
what is that cash balance?
Right now it's about $30 million. We have $25 million that is our operating cash balance that we need to maintain to keep our doors open throughout the year, and then we have about $30 million on top of that. So looking at employee raises and some other legislative mandated issues, potential for insurance to go up, we still haven't exactly figured out what all of this Obamacare is going to do to us at this point, but we anticipate that at our current level of spending that we should be financially solvent for at least another 3 to 4 years.
Would it be safe to say, Mr. Chairman, just, and I missed kind of your whole overview, but it's still pretty much the case. I mean, deer, elk, antelope hunters are basically subsidizing fishermen and any other kind of some of these other programs, or how has that gotten more in balance?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it is becoming a little bit more in balance, but still deer, elk, antelope pay the majority of the way for the entire agency.
Bird farms and fisheries. And then last, Mr. Chairman, thank you. On the aquatic invasive species, you know, and I'm one of those guys, go to Alcova only, you know what I mean? So we used to, so I appreciate your comments on that. But really, what are the recent stats? I haven't even heard of you finding a mussel on a boat anywhere. What's the latest data for the last year or whatever?
Director. Mr. Chairman, Representative, thanks for asking. We inspected more boats than we ever have this year, over 40,000 boats. There were 12 of those boats that we found that had dead mussels on them. Probably the most significant issue with aquatic invasive species is our neighbors. We have two of our neighbors, Angostura Reservoir and South Dakota, and we have a lot of folks from Angostura that recreate on Keyhole. They found aquatic invasive species quagga mussel in Angostura Reservoir. And we have another suspect reservoir in South Dakota. And if those are confirmed, those could have significant impacts on our program as far as northeast Wyoming. Mm-hmm. I was just at Lake Mead last week, and those houseboats, when they pull those houseboats out for the winter, it takes them about 3.5 to 4 days with two people with high-pressure washers to wash the mussels off of those boats before they can go anywhere. So that threat is very real, and we continue to monitor it to the best of our ability.
Well, good. Mr. Chairman, just on the South Dakota, the Angostura and what other suspect, those are not flowing into Wyoming, though, are they? Those were all flowing out from the Belfouche River. And
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's correct.
That's good news. That's good. Yeah. Okay, thank you, Director.
Okay, other questions? Representative Burns, Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, a few different questions. Back in the AIS, the Aquatic Invasive Species, there's a Senate file with one digit coming up. What do you think of that Senate file, sponsored by me?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, of course, that's the best piece Senate of legislation five. We've seen this session.
Oh, Senate File 5. Senate File 5. Oh, it's a single-digit bill number. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, other question. In your response to the House Chairman's House Appropriations Committee Chairman's question about the future and so forth, and you said you were worried about Obamacare, and I thought that we had eliminated that risk by last year, the state taking over the health care costs for Game and Fish employees.
Director? Mr. Chairman, Senator, that doesn't happen until next year, sir.
Oh, okay.
In order for that bill directs the commission to request that funding from this body during the next budget session.
Okay. Well, then no wonder it's a cause for concern.
Not a guarantee.
The only other thing I have a request for a few different documents. I have list of the 900 object series by contractor from last year. I was wondering if I could get an updated version of that for 2014.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, certainly.
I've got a five-year summary of Game and Fish Commission revenues and expenditures. I was wondering if I can get an updated version of that. Five-year total miles driven per year by Game and Fish employees. I'm assuming in Game and Fish trucks or Game and Fish vehicles. And, the five-year comparison of license sales.
In your spare time, Ms. Wood.
Well, they already have. All they need to do is add 14 and drop off 2009. Thank you.
Oof. Okay.
Go ahead.
Go, Chair. Sure, Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Talbot, the reimbursement for crop damage, wildlife damage to landowners, is there any requirements to the landowners at all? Can they just, do we have landowners, for example, prevent access through their lands that are getting reimbursements, or is there any requirements on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yeah, there are requirements. And Chapter 28 of Wyoming Game and Fish Commission regulation, in order for a claimant to be awarded a damage claim, they have to allow reasonable access, and that includes to adjoining public land to reduce the number and the nature of animals causing the damage.
Okay, thank you. Senator Burns.
And it's kind of parochial, and I think I already know the answer, but there was a deal in the works on up in Sheridan County and involving state lands to sell all the state inholdings to various owners, then take that money and purchase a particular ranch that's along the face that has a large elk population, and then use that for management of elk hunting. And I've gotten requests from constituents, whatever happened to that program, because nobody's heard anything about it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, my understanding is that's still moving forward. There's been some delays, but my understanding is that is still alive and well.
Should I be asking the Director of State Lands about that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I think that would be an excellent idea, but I can call her and visit with her as well.
If you would, I'd appreciate it. I'm in a tricky question because I'm one of the lessees that might be purchasing on the purchased property. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Co-Chair.
Just, Mr. Chairman and Director, if you could, and just on just the information request, just kind of give us a rundown of just employee numbers, and that's all commission, any general funded, federal funded. It's kind of that rundown. Give us like a, and maybe you did when I wasn't here, but like a look back maybe the last 10 years, you know, would be good. And so all employee numbers with a 10-year look back, that'd be something you could have
And you want them categorized quick. Or just the gross number?
Yeah, you could categorize, I think, be fine. But what I don't want to make this too much, but just give us so we can speak on the floor about things and people ask how much we've doubled the size of everything.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, and I know that you probably read a recent newspaper article that said that the Game and Fish Department has increased personnel by 100%. I think that you can see on this graph right here that we have reduced employees since 2005, and 2015 we have 381 employees, and
looks like AWAC and
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you'll see in 2015 with both commission and do we have the right slide up there? We keep the connection thing is over there.
Sorry.
You can see that we have an authorized number of 402 employees. If you look back not too long ago in about, let me see here, 2010, we were authorized 424 employees. That's 381 commission employees and 21 general employees, general fund employees.
Just, so those general fund, are those, and just kind of educate us all real quick. We've obviously done, I don't want to open up that budget, but just tell us where all those folks are kind of working.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, most of those folks are in our vet services program.
Okay, that's right.
And also we have a couple folks in the sage grouse program. We have several folks in the sensitive species program. Those were department programs that were taken over by the general fund.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Third and final time, other questions. All right. Thank you very much, Director. Appreciate your time. Ms. Wood, thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Is this your project?